Hello and welcome back to the Sleep Like a Baby podcast. I'm your host Hannah. I'm a mum of two and I'm a baby and toddler sleep coach. You might also have come across me via my Instagram account, Little Nest Sleep. Now I am just giddy with excitement to be back here today, although I have to confess it has taken me about 30 attempts to record this intro because I am feeling so rusty. I'm sure we can all relate though to that feeling of going back to work after having a baby and not being quite sure how to do everything, or things just taking a little bit more time. And if you haven't gone through that yet, I don't want to scare you. It's really nice. It's a really lovely feeling to be back doing your own thing, having your own work after that all-encompassing experience of motherhood for the first time. Anyway, this new series is going to be a little bit different than my normal podcast content. Usually I have a guest, we chat for about an hour and I cover a specific topic in that episode. I will be doing that again, but in the meantime, what I wanted to do was create a series of shorter mini episodes where I zoom in to some very specific sleep and maternal well-being topics. And that's because I just felt like having gone through the first year of my baby's sleep again, you know, experiencing all as a second time mum and as a sleep coach, and just talking to so many people via Instagram and of course in real life about all of these things, I just thought it would be a really helpful resource to have some short, sweet, focused episodes so that when you are going through the 4 month sleep regression or dealing with separation anxiety or dropping naps, you can just go and listen to this episode. So without further ado, here is the episode all about the 4 month sleep regression. So I wanted to start this new mini series talking about the 4 to 5 month period in a baby's sleep for various reasons. One is that I think many of us come into parenthood expecting to be tired and sleep deprived. That does not come as a huge shock for majority of us. However, I think what can come as a really big shock is that sleep may not get better with age, that it's not this linear process. And in fact, for many people, the hardest period of sleep can come at around 4 or 5 months. That can feel like quite a shock. Or perhaps you have sort of been muddling through the newborn stage. Things have felt really hard. And then you might just start being targeted by adverts at around the 3 to 4 month stage from sleep trainers, from baby brands telling you the 4 month sleep regression is coming. You've got to get on top of this. Don't let these bad habits become forever. You'll never sleep again if you don't do X, Y, or Z. For some, you know, for obvious reasons, which we'll go into, the internet and its marketing machine understands this and it starts telling parents, be afraid, be afraid, be afraid of the 4 month sleep regression. I certainly experienced that as a first time mum. And it's something I hear all the time from talking to people. So I want to reassure parents about what it is. It might be that you've never heard of the 4 month sleep regression and suddenly you are just wondering why your baby is so much more wakeful or why naps are so much shorter or harder to achieve. So let's look at it. Let's look at what's happening. Okay, so let's start off with the sleep science. I am not a big fan of the term sleep regression at all. In fact, many holistic sleep consultants feel the same because it's not a scientific term. Your baby is not regressing in sleep. And there's also no evidence whatsoever for any of these sleep regressions that we get. So it's the 6 month sleep regression, the 8 month, the 12 month, 24 month, whatever. These are not evidence-based terms. However, we do know that at some point around the 4 month mark, so it could be 3 months, 5 months, but basically around this period, we know that babies' sleep cycles do change. So this is perhaps the only so-called regression that is based in some evidence and some sleep science. And that is simply because when we are born, when we are brand new newborn babies, humans only have two stages of sleep. So we are in active sleep or quiet sleep. So very, very different to how adults and older children sleep. And there are various reasons why newborns sleep in this way, for brain growth and development. Okay, so what a baby is not experiencing in those first few months of life is these lighter stages of sleep. And what happens at around that 4 month mark is that they start to experience light sleep for the first time. So when a newborn falls asleep, they go straight into what we call REM. This is that sort of dream state. You can see their eyelids literally flickering. That's what REM stands for, rapid eye movement. So you can see it happening. Adults don't sleep like this. So try to remind yourself throughout this period that the 4 month sleep shift is actually a really good thing. It is a sign your baby's sleep is becoming a little bit more adult, a little bit more like yours. And so during this change, your baby, when they fall asleep, instead of going straight into REM, they're going into what we call NREM1. Let's not get too bogged down by these technical sleep terms, but essentially they're starting off their sleep in light stages of sleep. We all sleep in sleep cycles, and each sleep cycle has different stages. It's a little bit like the gears of a car. So we're going through the first gear, second gear, third, fourth. And then at the end of the cycle, we come to the end of that and we go back into that cycle again. That's how all of us sleep. So we know this because that feeling of, say, you've dozed off in front of the TV, assuming you're not sleep deprived. So think about when you, maybe before kids, in your normal state, when you're not super, super tired, you doze off. There's that feeling of, I'm sort of half awake, half asleep. I'm sinking into that sort of unconscious sleep state. But if something wakes you, you come out of it pretty quickly. That's what your baby is starting to experience, that feeling. However, the brain is great. Brain is clever at sleep, right? The brain will always get the type of sleep that we need. So you know that if you are really, really exhausted, super, super sleep deprived, and I'm guessing everyone listening to this knows that state, that feeling of the second your head touches the pillow, you are out like a light. You don't know when you wake if you've been asleep for 18 hours or 18 seconds. It's that really heavy feeling. When that happens, our brain has actually skipped the light stages of sleep and prioritized the deeper stages, because that's going to be the kind of sleep that your brain needs in sleep deprivation mode. So this is the difference. It's from going zonking out to sort of easing into sleep. And so basically there are these different stages now. There are these four stages of sleep. And at the end, the final stage is when we get into REM. So what might happen for a baby at this stage? Well, for one thing, they're going to be potentially more wakeful because their sleep cycles have changed. They're coming to the end of a sleep cycle and they might need a bit of support to go back into the next one because they are getting used to that experience of light sleep. They might be slightly harder to settle as well. You might find that they need a bit more support or a bit less stimulation around them in order to go into that sleep, simply because, again, it is a lighter stage of sleep. You might find that their naps get shorter as well. So your baby might have been snoozing for 1, 2, 3 hours in the day, giving you lots of breaks. And now they might wake up after 30 minutes, 45 minutes and be done and be good. And there's other reasons why that happens as well, by the way, because it's not just about the sleep cycles changing. But that is essentially the science. That is what is happening in your baby's brain. And it's brilliant. And all of these different stages of sleep bring different things to the brain. So it's a really good thing. I think that really does help. Why else does sleep change? Okay, so let's look at it. So when we're first born, we have so much growing to do. We see just how super needy human newborns are compared to other animals in the animal kingdom. You know, a baby giraffe is born and they're on their feet walking. It takes our babies at least a year to get to that point. So that high sleep needs comes from in that newborn period, especially that fourth trimester. Babies in the first month might be sleeping 16, 17, 18 hours a day, whereas that that need for sleep is going to decrease significantly over the period of the first year, particularly in those first few months. So you might find that by 2 or 3 or 4 months, your baby is needing maybe only 14 hours sleep in a 24-hour period. That's quite a significant difference. So we've got lower sleep pressure, lower sleep needs as well. So it's not just that the sleep cycles are changing, but your baby is becoming more alert, more aware of the world around them, and they need less sleep. So we get shorter naps often at this point as well. There are other reasons as well why a baby would become slightly more or considerably more wakeful during this period. And that's because between 4 and 6 months, there is this rapid stage of brain development. Your baby goes from this very cute but not very active newborn who can't really even hold up their own neck to this alert, awake, rolling perhaps, maybe even trying to sit up if they're super strong. You know, this little person who's got better eyesight, who's, making sense of the world, starting to develop emotionally. All of those things are coming together. And brain development affects sleep so much. So it's this period of rapid brain growth, rapid physical growth. And that's the other thing as well. Your baby might need to be feeding a lot more in the night because we do our growing at night. And if you're breastfeeding, we produce our highest levels of prolactin, which is the milk making hormone, at night as well. So we're sort of designed to nap in the day for short periods and then cluster feed in the evening, and then have this big burst of growth and development and feed frequently at night to sort of give us the energy to do all those things and to feed that brain. The other thing as well is that the body clock is really starting to develop. So what we call the circadian rhythm, you know, that internal clock, does not exist at birth. So it only starts to develop through exposure to things like daylight and other certain social cues. So your baby's body clock is starting to learn night and day. And on a basic sort of hormonal level, melatonin, which is our sleep hormone, is again not produced by a baby until around 2 or 3 months of age. So if you're breastfeeding, your baby will be exposed to melatonin in your milk, which often for most adults is released at, say, maybe 10 p.m. in the evening, say if you're going to bed at around 10, 11. So that's when your melatonin will be. So that's one of the reasons why a newborn baby's bedtime is very likely to be much later than we might expect, nowhere near that sort of 7 p.m. And that's because they can't make their own melatonin. Their body clock is so underdeveloped. They're learning the difference between day and night. And so they're going to go to bed when your body tells them to, hopefully. So by about 4 months of age, though, that body clock is, they're starting to produce their own melatonin. They're starting to perhaps get a bit of an earlier natural bedtime. Not always. This is a really, there's no set milestone for an earlier bedtime. For some babies it's 3 months, for some babies it's 7 months. It really depends on so many factors: your own biology, your own lifestyle, your own family structures, everything, all the temperament and the sleep needs of the child, of course, and whether they're an owl or a lark, etc. So we've got this circadian rhythm starting to influence things. We've got a baby who now needs less sleep than they did a month or two ago. We've got a baby whose sleep cycles have literally physically changed and they're experiencing light sleep for the first time. And then we've got all of these developmental leaps, emotional, physical, social, etc. changes. It's a lot, right? Like it's what I like to refer to, and I'm going to use a swear word, so apologies if you've got kids listening, but it's a clusterfuck of all of these things happening at once. And then what we're going to do at around 4 months is we're going to throw onto you a big hormonal shift for the mother. And let's talk then about what is going on for you at this stage postpartum. Because what we often see is when the new baby arrives, if you're lucky and privileged enough, you're going to have support from your community, from your family or partner or whatever that looks like for you, which is great and obviously should be happening. But that hands-on support tends to naturally start to fade away. And perhaps we have this expectation culturally of mothers that by 4 or 5 months, they don't need our hands-on help anymore. They've found their way. They're doing things. They're on the path to, you know, normality again. And you don't get the people turning up with food. You don't get the offers of help of, hi, can I come and hold your baby while you have a nap or a shower? There might be an assumption that your baby is 4 or 5 months now and you're fine and you should be cracking on. You might have internalized that message as well. I know I certainly have, that, God, by 4 months, I should be looking like I did pre-baby. I should be just more together. You know, should I still be feeling so postpartum, so kind of all over the place? My baby's 5 months old. He's rolling. He's in these new bigger clothes. He's not a tiny newborn anymore. Why can't I get it together? But I think we should have more sympathy and empathy for new mums in our culture and for ourselves. So yeah, so you're probably missing all of that extra support and people are probably assuming that you're fine. And, you know, our hormones are still going through so much at this stage of postpartum life. And obviously I'm not an endocrinologist and this is going to depend on how you're feeding your baby and your own, your age, your own medical history and background. But there very often is a bit of a hormonal crash for women between 3, 4, 5 months. So that's a lot on top of things. You know, your body is still going through so much stuff here. Your organs are still moving back to where they were pre-pregnancy. You're having disturbed sleep. Your adrenaline from the newborn period has probably run out. Your cortisol levels are probably quite high. If this is your second, third, fourth baby, then you will have other children to care for. Your time will be very, very stretched. And if it's your first baby, then that is just as difficult because you are navigating this colossal change in your life, in yourself. And if you are not aware of the term matrescence, then I urge you to go and look it up. I did a wonderful episode about it with Olivia Hinge in the first series. And in fact, it's a word that comes up frequently on this series. So if you're a new listener, please listen to previous episodes. And I will put some links in the show notes to more information about matrescence. But it basically frames that period of becoming a mother. So it is the process of becoming a mother, much like adolescence is becoming an adult, matrescence is becoming a maternal person. It is this change, this period of enormous change, physically, hormonally, socially, emotionally, yeah, through everything, just in the same way that adolescence is. And just because you are 4 months, 5 months postpartum, it does not mean that you have recovered, that you have bounced back. Bounce back culture is so toxic. You might look the same. You might even be, you know, a size smaller or a size bigger, or you might, you know, you might look amazing at 4 or 5 months postpartum, but inside you might be feeling all over the place, and that is so normal. Or you might look nothing like you did before, and your identity, your outward identity might be in total flux, and that might be really, really discombobulating for you. It is a period of sort of undoing and stitching yourself back together and finding new parts of yourself. It's not just a physical transition. So 4 months, that's a lot, isn't it? One of the phrases I find myself using all the time when talking about baby sleep is that comparison is the thief of joy. And this might be the first time that you are really comparing your baby to others. Obviously, in the newborn period, you're going to be curious about what your peers' babies are doing. But again, it comes back to this expectation that actually in the newborn phase, it's really normal to be sleep deprived. It's really normal for a baby to wake and feed frequently. All of the websites and books and healthcare materials will reinforce that message. And you may have been told by countless healthcare professionals, you cannot spoil a baby. Feed, respond, cuddle, nurture, soothe. And then there can be this shift in the way that we start to talk about babies. You start to hear a little bit about, well, just be careful, don't get them too used to this. Or now that they're 4 months, they can start to form these habits, and you want good habits for sleep. So, you know, if they fall asleep whilst feeding, they're going to wake at the end of that sleep cycle looking for that feed, and then you're going to have to be repeating that every 1-2 hours all night. Don't do that. And I just want to say that is nonsense. That is not true, but it is a really good marketing sales technique. It really puts the fear in you, because on paper that sounds like, yeah, that sounds like that could be a thing that happens. You know, the logic makes sense, but the reality is quite different with babies. But yeah, you might be finding that you are really starting to compare your baby to others, and you might feel envy about your friend with the baby who does the perfect naps and goes to bed at 7 and sleeps through with maybe only one feed at this age, or no feeds. And you might be thinking, God, what am I doing wrong? I'm feeling all over the place. I thought sleep was going to be getting better at this point. I thought I'd done all the right things, and my baby is very wakeful. So if you take away one thing from this podcast, I just hope that you know that it's really, really normal for sleep to be all over the shop at this point, that you're not doing anything wrong, and that you're not creating bad habits, and that there are actual reasons why sleep at 4, 5, 6 months is tricky. But when should you worry? Like, what if it isn't just the sleep regression or all of these things I've listed? What if your baby is struggling with something and you're just ignoring it? That can be a worry. And I think we talk a lot about gut feeling and what is your like instinct saying? But I certainly have moments where I think, God, I actually don't know. Like, I do have gut feelings, but I'm also Googling a lot of stuff. And, you know, I don't have an instinct about this. I've never done this before. So don't beat yourself up too much if you just don't have a clue what is going on for your baby. There are certain red flags, I suppose, that we would look out for. Certainly if I was working with someone one-to-one and they were saying that they had a very, very wakeful 4, 5, 6 month old. The first question I suppose I would ask is, what is the behaviour? Are we dealing with a baby who is really unsettled in the daytime and in the nighttime? Or is it just at the nighttime? Are they telling you or trying to tell you that they are in pain? Are they hard to soothe? What kind of cries are they? Are they wide awake and just happy and playing and actually just not going back to sleep because perhaps they're not tired? You know, ask yourself, what is this behaviour? What is their temperament as well? Do you have a highly sensitive cuddle monster who just needs a lot of co-regulation with you and just seems, you know, that they are just more alert and sensitive to the world around them? So highly sensitive babies, they estimate to be about 1 in 10. And it's like they hear more, they feel more, they just need that little bit more support. These are the babies that you're not just plonking down on a playmat and leaving for 10 minutes while you have a cup of tea. They are on your hip or in your arms, almost feels like 24/7. They are cautious of other people often. They hear sounds that maybe you feel like other babies don't hear. They might seem more alert, more awake. They might just seem just that little bit more intense than other children. That's nothing that you've done. Sometimes people worry, I'm a worrier, I'm anxious, I'm a nervous, you know, new mum, I must be creating that sensitive temperament. No, it's not. It's just temperament is a thing. For some babies, though, if they can never lie on their back, if they are always crying out in pain, lying flat, then that can be a sign of reflux, silent reflux. So obviously we'd look to see, is your baby spitting up a lot? Are they vomiting a lot? Does their breath smell slightly acidic? Do you ever see kind of yellow bile-like kind of colours in the vomit? Or are they never vomiting, but are they constantly arching their back, squirming, seeming uncomfortable during feeds? Are they clicking during feeds? Are they dribbling a lot? Are they spilling out milk when they feed? Are they coming on and off, whether that's the boob or the bottle? Are they struggling to latch? Are they burping a lot? Are they extremely farty, extremely wriggly babies? Do they seem uncomfortable in their body? That's a symptom I really wouldn't want to ignore, and I would want to like trust your gut on. I will do a separate episode on reflux as well, but that's something to think about. They might also just need a little bit more support to wind down. So if you do have a highly sensitive baby, they might just need a little less sensory input. They might need more calm, more darkness, more soothing than other babies, or you might take you longer to prepare them for sleep, particularly in the evening. That can have a really positive impact on how a baby settles and how they do for the first few hours of the night, especially if they fall asleep in a very calm way. I would also suggest to anyone who is concerned about their baby sleep, particularly in the first 6 months, is to speak to someone who has really good training in infant feeding. So a lactation consultant or a sleep coach who has done proper training in feeding support. And lactation consultants can help with babies who are exclusively formula fed as well. They're not just for babies who are breastfed. Or if you are combination feeding or you are breastfeeding, my first port of call would be to a feeding specialist, because you might be trying to space the feeds out too far. You might not be feeding enough in the day. You might be overfeeding if you're bottle feeding. You might be, there might just be something going on with your latch, with the positioning. There's so many things that might be affecting your baby's comfort in the night. Or you might be overwinding them, for example, whatever it is. So I would speak to someone who has a qualification and training and good experience with unsettled babies and feeding. And I can also list some people that work remotely in the show notes as well, if that helps. It's also possible that for really unsettled, wakeful babies at this age, there is an undiagnosed allergy or intolerance. So again, we'd be looking for signs like perhaps reflux, persistent eczema, rashes, reddening skin, diarrhea, or very, very frequent bowel movements, excessive amounts of mucus in the stool, or you might even see blood in their nappies as well. So I would, again, immediately seek medical advice. Trust your gut. If you feel like someone isn't listening to you, then try to advocate for yourself, for your child, take a second opinion, see what other advice, support you can get if you don't feel like you're being listened to. I think there are too many women who are just cutting out dairy, cutting out soy for no reason, just because someone said they have an unsettled baby. Oh, it must be an allergy. And then they're going 6 weeks, 8 weeks, limiting their diet. It's going to make them miserable. And if it's not necessary, then don't do it. So again, it's about getting that skilled one-to-one support or quality advice from people rather than just sort of trying things willy-nilly. Because look, we're all desperate for sleep at certain points. We'll buy that ridiculously expensive thing at 3 a.m. because your friend's mother's cousin's best friend said that particular baby mobile was the thing that got her baby to sleep for 5 hours at a time. We've all been there, but we all know that it's not really, it's not really the answer. And so, is this the time to sleep train? Is this self-settling what they need? Short answer, no. You actually don't need to sleep train. There is really not any evidence that this will be a long-term or meaningful shift. You might temporarily get some longer stretches of sleep. I say might, it doesn't work for all children. But it's really not my bag, and I'm here to talk about the alternatives to that. So I wouldn't recommend it at this age, especially because night feeds are so important in the first year of life. So any approach that requires a parent to restrict feeds, reduce feeds, limit their responsiveness is not my vibe. how we show up, how we soothe, how we respond whilst our baby's brains are growing is so important. Whilst their attachments are forming, it is crucial. So I would never suggest any method that requires you to limit eye contact or stand outside and listen and stand outside the room and listen to them cry. Or even if you've got a baby who is very, very distressed and your neck's in the cot, I would always ask you, what is your gut saying? I'm sure your gut is saying, or your heart is saying, pick up my baby, give them a cuddle and tell them it's going to be okay. And so I firmly believe that a mother's heart is never wrong. So what else can you do in the form of sleep regression to help yourself? First and foremost, look at you. What do you need other than 12 hours sleep and a spa day? But realistically, what would help? Are you doing too much right now? Are you working, going to baby groups, trying to be all things to all people? Is this a chapter in which actually you just need to meet yours and your children's needs? Can you say no a little bit more? Can you do less? Can you rest when the baby is napping? Can you rest when other caregivers are around? Don't let things like showers and healthy meals and staying hydrated slip by the wayside. Be really firm with yourself. Mother yourself. Or say to somebody else who isn't going through this right now, I need someone to hold me to account here. I need you to help me remember to look after myself. So do the things for you. That is so, so important. There are other strategies, I suppose, in terms of getting more sleep. If you have a partner or another adult that you live with, if you can get an extra 1 or 2 hours first thing in the morning, that can be a real game changer for how the rest of the day goes. And also, if you want to go to bed as soon as your baby does, that's fine as well. This won't be forever. I know there can be this urge. I feel it. I felt it myself. I want to have my evening back. I want to have that time for myself. Just remember, that time is coming. It's just not right now. It will come, but not now. So prioritize your sleep and your rest. If you can't sleep, don't forget how important stillness and calm is for your body. Have a bath, read a book, lay still, rest yourself, please, and nourish yourself. Get some blood tests done. Are you anemic? What's going on with your iron levels? What's going on with your hormones? Are they where they should be? Talk to your GP or your doctor. Talk to, you know, people and say, I know I have a baby. I know I'm postpartum. I know I'm not getting a lot of sleep, but I'm really tired right now. Could there be something else going on? Investigate that. Just if nothing else, to rule it out. And then I want you to think about, your diet, and making sure you're eating regularly. Even just eating, say, 4 or 5 small meals a day can make a really big difference when you're particularly tired, because it means your body isn't digesting these big, heavier meals. It's sort of keeping your energy levels topped up, and you're not sort of getting that lethargic, big feed kind of vibe. Please, please, please get outside as much as you can every day. That will help your energy levels too much. Again, I'm not talking about doing too much. We don't need to be doing park run, but a walk, a 10-minute walk to the shop, a 10-minute walk here or there regularly throughout the day will really, really lift your mood and your physical kind of energy. Also, don't underestimate the healing power of talking to people. Find your tribe, whether that is online or in real life, vent, moan, send an epic voice note to someone who gets it. Get it off your chest. Speak to people. Okay, and what about the actual sleep bit for your baby? Well, as I've said, rule out red flags. I have a free red flags guide as well in my Instagram that you can find and download. Then we want to think about sleep. Like, do they actually need less sleep in the daytime now? Are you trying to get them to nap, 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 and they're actually just not that tired anymore? So consider just spreading out the wake windows, doing bedtime a little bit later, following their cues more. If wake windows that you're following or an app that you're using isn't working, ditch it. I know it's scary to let stuff go, but you may as well have this attitude of this is a period for experimentation. I know sleep is probably going to be a bit all over the place anyway, so what have I got to lose? Let's just go for it. So I would do that. And then thinking about, this could be a time to really introduce some lovely rituals and associations around sleep. So for example, think about your bedtime routine. Maybe you've already got one, but it needs mixing up. Does it need to happen a bit later, a bit earlier? Does it need to be longer? So you might have quite a short routine when they're newborn, and now actually you might want to add in more things, maybe a story or a song or massage or some other element. You might want to introduce a very, very short and simple pre-nap routine at home. Now, I wouldn't want you to be at home for every single nap of the day at this age, and it might not be possible, but you might find that actually having a few little rituals when you do a nap at home can help. If you have a baby who has a cot allergy, please don't worry about this either. You do not need to be putting them down at this age. That will come. If they do not want to be put down, then just embrace a sling, a pram, your arms. Do what works at this stage. My number one piece of advice to get through the 4-5 month stage is do what works today. Do not let fear rob you of anything at this time. Don't worry about the fear of what I can't do this at 8 months, 10 months. What am I going to be doing? I can't rock them when they're 2 years old. Don't worry about that. You will cross that bridge when you come to it. Things will change on their own, or when they're older and bigger and you're ready, you can make changes. Right now, at this point, with all of this development, with all of this hormonal stuff going on for you, with all of the tiredness and craziness and change and matrescence, just lean into it and do what works. If a really good sling and a walk outside means that the naps are less stressful and you're getting some time for yourself, do that. Do not sit in a dark room with a white noise machine, shushing, patting, trying to get them to go down drowsy but awake and self-settle in a cot. If that is stressful, it sounds stressful just talking about it, drop it. If that's your vibe, you can do that later. But right now, in the middle of a sleep crisis, do what works today. Co-sleeping can be just the most magical, empowering, life-saving thing at this stage. Again, don't worry. I don't want them in my bed when they're 3 or 7 or 10. Don't worry about that. You will make the right choices at the right times. Just lean into what your child is telling you they need today. Co-sleeping, I appreciate though, isn't for everybody. So you might find that having a sidecar cot or even a floor bed that you can kind of roll away, cuddle them, that might help. You might find a shift system with a partner helps at this point. You might find that you can ask for help from family members or friends who might come for the first few hours of the night, or they might come and help you get a nap in the afternoon. Please don't be afraid to ask for help at this stage. You are still postpartum. You are still a new mum, even if this is your fourth baby. You have never been a mother to this child before. You have never been a mother to 3 children or 4 children before. It's all still new. You are allowed to be asking for help. And I say this as someone who finds it really hard to ask for help, but it is essential at this stage. And finally, a question I'm often asked is, how long should this so-called regression go on for? Like, if it's been 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 6 months, like, when do I know it's the regression and when do I know it's something else? And that's a very good question. Sometimes a clusterfuck can roll from one thing into another. So for example, you know, they've got their sleep cycles change, and then they get a cold, and then they start rolling, and then they maybe cut their first tooth, and then they've dropped a nap, and it's just one thing after another, and you just feel like you can't get a break. That's not the regression. That is just bad luck and classic baby timing. So I wouldn't worry too much if that's happening. You know, look at what's going on. What are the reasons? Or, you know, they are just, is this a baby who is just quite sensitive, who just needs support for sleep? They just like a cuddle. That's just who they are. And this is the hard thing, right? Because in 5 years' time, you're going to look at your child and you're going to know them inside out, and you're going to say, oh, of course you were like this as a baby. Look at your personality now. You were never going to be that baby that did X, Y, Z. You were never going to sleep like so-and-so's baby, because you're such different people. But we don't know that now. So try to zoom out and just have that perspective. We're learning about our kids. This is a huge process of getting to know them. And it's hard, but it is not forever. So even if this tricky period is 3 weeks, 4 weeks, maybe it's 2 months, maybe it's longer, it really won't be forever. And you can always change things that aren't working. So if you feel overwhelmed at always being the person to rock them back to sleep, for example, then there are gentle and responsive ways to introduce other caregivers. And we can cross those bridges as we come to them. And there will be more episodes like this where we talk about how to make those changes, how to navigate each stage. But for now, please do what works today. And please don't worry about creating any bad habits during the 4 month sleep regression. I promise you, it will be okay. Okay, I'm going to leave there. My mini episode was not so mini. That was 40 minutes, but it was a big one. If you've got any requests for specific topics, please get in touch with me via Instagram. And as always, thank you so much for being here. If you need more support, I will be starting to take one-on-one clients again soon. And I also have my baby and toddler sleep guides, as well as various webinars on specific topics, all via my website. And you can find the links on my Instagram as well as in the show notes. Thank you so much.